We're down to the final four teams in the European Rugby Champions Cup with two fascinating matches ahead. The holders are back in the semis and impressive once again.
Oh, lovely sidestep from Good and a no-look pass to Ashton. A fourth try for Saracens and Chris Ashton now level with Vincent Clerc's European Cup scoring record.
Can Chris Ashton now help Saracens triumph against the team that toppled Toulouse?
Munster are having a quarter-final party here now. Still lots to do in this competition, but they will enjoy this. It's another 40-pointer against Toulouse in a quarter-final. It still has the makings of a very special season for Munster.
If Munster prevail in Dublin, what price an all-Irish final?
Sexton completing Leinster's win. Wasps blitzed, particularly in that first half, and the three times champions bang in the race for a fourth title.
After beating England's league leaders, Leinster now face the final French challengers.
And now the break might be on. Be a try for Benno. He's celebrating already. He's being hounded down by a World Cup winner, Nonu. But the winner just now is Damien Penno on his European debut. And the overall winner is Clermont. Is this to be Clermont's year?
On the EPCR European Rugby Show, we'll speak to Shane Byrne of Leinster, Carl Heyman, who won the title three times at Toulon for that French perspective, James Downey once of Munster. Plus, you'll also hear from Frank Azima and Leo Cullen during our in-depth preview of the Champions Cup semi-finals. There's also a look ahead to the last four in the European Rugby Challenge Cup, and we'll find out how preparations are going ahead of finals weekend in Edinburgh. Well, hello and welcome to the show. I'm James Burridge and I'm joined by the former Newcastle, Northampton, Toulon fly half who's been sunning himself for the last 2 weeks. That's Tom May. And get my strike in early, I think. And EPCRugby.com's Emma Thurston to preview these two mouth-watering semi-finals over the weekend of the 22nd and 23rd of April. Tom, I know you've been working hard from your sun lounger, but you look at the quarterfinals we just had, they were of the highest quality. Any defining moments for you?
Defining moment for Wasps, perhaps Willie LaRue dropping the ball over the line. That was a missed opportunity for them, but they lacked intensity and had some defensive issues, Wasps, which allowed Leinster to get away. But for me, the attacking threat that Saracens showed in that quarterfinal against Glasgow was exceptional. They always looked like they were going to make a line break. They always looked like they were going to make yards in those wider channels and look really strong at this stage of the competition.
You look for the killer instinct at this stage, don't you, Emma?
I think you do, yeah. And you had two sides in Munster and Clermont that sort of took to about 50, 60 minutes to really pull away in their matches, but they did. They found that extra gear and sort of took the games away from their respective opponents. So, but killer instinct you do look for, and I think we certainly saw that from Saracens from the off. They never looked like losing that game. Their intent was clear very, very early on with that attacking flair.
And one side which didn't look like losing was Munster, Tom, against Toulouse.
No, and bear in mind where Toulouse are in their domestic competition. I think that's a game that probably everyone would have banked on Munster winning. They were in control for large parts of that game. Toulouse hung in there, as you would expect from a side that have got so much European history. But I think Munster, you know, they're looking really strong, and that's probably the two strongest teams going head-to-head in that semi-final, I think.
There's no doubt the appetite is definitely growing as we reach the semi-final stage. The fans are getting in touch on social media. What are they saying, Emma?
They are. Well, we asked which of our semi-final clubs has impressed you the most this season and why. We asked that at Champions Cup on Twitter. We're also at ER Challenge Cup on Twitter and on Facebook at European Rugby Challenge Cup and European Rugby Champions Cup. And so many responses that we've had. PJ on Facebook says it has to be Munster. Coming through the trials they faced both as a club and as people earlier in the season is impressive, and we'll read out some more of your responses during the show.
Check out the Edinburgh 2017 section of epcrugby.com to secure your place for an outstanding rugby experience at BT Murrayfield. With the final of the Challenge Cup at 8 p.m. local time on Friday the 12th of May and the final of the Champions Cup the following day at 5 p.m. local time.
So, four giants of European club rugby, two massive encounters, which we'll discuss in chronological order. Let's start with Munster Rugby against Saracens, the first match of the Champions Cup semi-finals. 22nd of April, Saturday, 3:15 kickoff local time. Tom, this has got emotion written all over it. The question for Munster is, can they handle it? They have gone through hell, and they have got themselves to an incredible stage, but it's about channeling it, and sometimes emotion can get the better of you.
Yeah, I think, you know, they've had a very emotional season for obvious reasons. But I think having listened to some of the interviews that have come out of Munster and how they're talking about that, they're mentioning it and they're using it to drive their focus and channel their performances, I think. I don't think they're going to let it get on top of them. I think before Christmas, probably that was what it was all about. That was what was driving their performance. But I think now they've created enough momentum in the way that they're playing that they're actually just a side that are bang in form. They didn't really have to do a huge amount to topple Toulouse. Toulouse stuck in there for a fair bit, but we're never going to last the full 80 minutes. But I think they're now a side that have created form through, albeit, you know, some tragic circumstances, but they've created themselves into a top team.
And equally, Emma, I mean, Saracens have to kind of put all that to one side, don't they? And I go back to what we talked about in the last podcast. This is effectively an English team going back to Dublin. Wasps got completely unstuck, just as England had done. You almost felt for Wasps, they hadn't almost learnt the lessons of England's defeat in Ireland. I mean, that they were undone by attack, but, you know, if England were undone by defence. Saracens, what lessons do you think they can learn from those two games?
I think Saracens need to, and it sounds very cliche, they say it all the time, focus on themselves, but they do because Saracens have shown time and time again they can play away from home, whether that's in the Premiership or in the European competition. They're not fazed by an away crowd that aren't in their favour and the atmosphere of this big occasion. This is their sixth semi-final. They know what it's all about. I mean, it's Munster's 12th. But so we've got two teams that know exactly how to handle this occasion. And I think from a lessons point of view, they need to make sure that they're not sucked into playing a game that Munster want them to play and they play their own game. They put that out in the park and deliver because they can.
You know, you talk about attack and defence. Wow. Well, they're pretty hot at attack right now. You know, they're running tries in left, right and centre, and their defence is something they've been proud of for years. You know, they built up from a strong defence. That's how they built their team. You know, it wasn't that long ago that we were calling them boring Saracens, was it? You know, and now they have an ability to run in tries, you know, like Alex Goode 2-3 weeks ago from, you know, 80 metres out.
And Ashton as well. We talked about Chris Ashton in the headlines, but he is one of those dangerous runners, and he's a tracking wing. But I suppose if you're looking at Munster, Keith Earls, whoever it is against him on the wing, you just know you have to limit his space, don't you? Because he's almost like a 747 going down the runway. If you give him more time and more speed, he'll just take off, and you won't be able to catch him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Ashley's biggest strength is actually being able to read the play, and whatever play that Saracens are playing, he tends to understand where the ball's going to end up, or he reads the defence and sees where the break is going to be made, and that's his real strength. But, you know, as we saw against Glasgow, if you give him enough room, 2 or 3 metres of space, he's going to be there or thereabouts. You know, I think he finished up with 2 tries, was it, in that quarterfinal? 2 disallowed. You know, he was there or thereabouts, and he's always close to scoring.
2 tens, slightly different makeups. I look at Blaendale, actually. I think of Stephen Larkham when I see him. He has this wonderful, languid running style, doesn't he? And Farrell is just... he almost doesn't need to be described anymore, doesn't he? Because you just take one look at Owen Farrell and he just sends shudders through you because he's just an extremely aggressive 10 who just won't take a backward step.
Exactly. I think Tyler Blaendale, he has a lot of time on the ball, and I always think that if you've got a fly half that looks like he's got all the time in the world when he'll be under intense pressure, then that's when you know you've got somebody that can orchestrate a game well. But Owen Farrell, for me, is one of these players. He gets better and better every time. You think he's at that level already, and then he just takes it to another level with the defensive intensity that he brings and the way that he orchestrates the defence while making exactly the right decision at exactly the right time, be that boot to ball, distribution out, and pulling other players in. They're both going to be key. And I think on paper, Farrell will have the edge.
Let's get a Munster perspective. Let's speak to James Downey, who knows everything about Thomond Park, about Limerick, and about how this team just keep on performing despite all the emotional heartache they've been through. James, we've talked about the emotion already. How do you think the players have dealt with that element so far this season since the tragic passing of Axel?
Oh, extremely admirable, I think. You look at the mindset they need to have to really galvanise things and to really bring the province. I think that whole province is so unique in terms of coming together and getting behind the team. And I think everyone's with them in the grief that happened, and the players weren't on their own. And it's just one of these things, that this sort of Munster team that really pushes them forward when a tragedy happens or something along those lines. It's going to really push them over the line. And this is a season where people didn't expect too much out of them. And they've really, really come to the fore, and players have really stood up. And they're not a team of superstars. They work hard, and it's brought rewards on the field. But look, I don't know how they've dealt with some of it, but I think it's an overused word, and momentum's there, and winning's a habit for them. And they've only lost two of the last 15, so they've gone quite well, won the last five. So momentum's with them, and that winning habit.
Jimmy, when I'm watching Munster, I love watching Tauten Scannell in the midfield. As a former centre yourself, how do you assess that pairing? Because I think they are key to Munster's performances.
No, I agree with that, yeah. I think to have a second receiver at 12 makes a huge difference. And I think Tauten's defensive nous has been brilliant for Munster. You know, you look at, they had Saili, but he doesn't have that. He has the attacking threat all right, but he's been unlucky with injury as well, I think. But I think Tauten's been immense for them, and the players speak very highly of him, and he's fitted in seamlessly to the squad. But that left-footed second receiver and Zeebo as well, and thinking of the weekend, I think you're going to have an extremely accurate kicking game for this weekend. And for me, I prefer having a bigger centre, maybe a 13, and the way the Australians do it with Curran Drani, and have a second distributor at 12. And it's harder to defend out there, you know, rather than having the reverse in that situation.
That was going to be my next question. How do you defend against Saracens?
If I had those answers, I'd be doing okay. But everyone knows how Saracens play, and the way they're very regimented off kickoffs, and their exit strategies, and how good they are, and how good they work off the ball, and the kick chases, and it's the thankless stuff that they do that actually brings rewards towards the end of the game. But like, they do break it down, and it's quite frustrating when you see the scoreboard taking over. It's 3, 6, 9, and all of a sudden you're chasing the game. So I think Munster need to play smart. I think they need to really bring it. It's a cup match, and I think that always suits Munster, and they've played Saracens before in this situation, and I actually think they can get to them. It has to be one up front, it's a cliche again, but up front is going to be huge. You know, there's some big battles there, and as long as Munster are accurate in the back three and gathering high balls, not giving away stupid penalties, having the right discipline around it at the right time, so Farrell's not going to get those kicks and get them going forward. Again, they need to keep the crowd on side and keep them behind them from where it go, and really put the Saris boys under pressure. But on the flip side, Saracens, they know what to expect. They've been in plenty of rugby cauldrons before, and they've been there and done it.
James, great to have you on the show. Thanks very much indeed. No doubt you'll be watching this weekend.
I will indeed, yeah. I'll be working at it this weekend, so looking forward to seeing some old faces. So hopefully catch up over there.
James, thanks very much indeed. James Downey then, former Munster centre. Right, let's hear from a Saracens side now. Let's speak to John Trigg, who's the Sarri Supporters Association chairman. John, well, what a weekend. Travelling to Dublin, no doubt, so many of you. And that support going into such a cauldron is surely going to be pivotal.
I think you're right, absolutely. It's it's a massive, massive game. I guess we're going to be a bit outnumbered as well in terms of the crowd.
Yeah, you've been there before, though. You know how to deal with that.
Yeah. We know how to deal with it, and I think the team knows how to deal with it. So, I guess we travel with a good deal of confidence, actually, but knowing it's going to be a monumental game.
You're looking to match Leinster's tournament record of 17 games undefeated. What is it about Sarries in Europe? What do you think they learned? I mean, they had to learn the hard way as well, but what do you think has been the turning points, shall we say, of the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's the accumulated knowledge of playing at that level, I think, that when Sarries first got into that sort of getting out of the group stages, that you suddenly realise that it's a different sort of game. It takes a while to come to terms with that, I think, and that sort of accumulation. But that whole culture around the Saracens squad and the teamwork, the bonding, working for each other in a way that I think typifies their approach, and it really comes over very strongly. I mean, even recent results in the Premiership, even this last weekend, that the way they got a result out of that game against Saints, and goodness knows how they did that, but there's something about some inevitable force there that just gets them through. And that's their great strength.
And performance-wise, obviously, you've got an individual like George Cruz coming back in after a decent time out with injury. What does he bring?
Well, George brings a lot of experience. Interestingly, I think we saw this over the weekend, actually, in the Saints game, that where we're dipping back into the depth of the squad, and the number of players there who can step up when it's needed is phenomenal. George has got the experience, having grown up with Saracens, and then obviously with his international career as well. So getting him back into top flight action there is going to be a big boost, I think.
And with regards to Chris Ashton, he's obviously leaving Saracens at the end of the season. How much of a loss will he be moving forward? He's been brilliant over the past, since he signed for Saracens, he's been in fantastic form.
Yeah, it's difficult to perceive it in any other way than a loss. But bear in mind, we lost David Strettle a year or so back, and suddenly, we've got the lads coming through. Sean Maitland has shown great promise this season since he joined us. Ben Earl, who's on the wing on the weekend, who shows a lot of promise as well. So there's almost like a production line in the background that you take these guys on, they deliver, and when their time's up and they move on, there's the right sort of succession planning to bring others through.
John, good to have you on. Good luck this weekend. That's John Trigg there, the Saracen Supporters Association chairman. Right, prediction time, you two. Let's start with Tom May.
Saracens. Just because I think they've smashed some teams over the past few weeks.
I'm not going to smash Munster.
Well, no, I didn't say that. I said they smashed some
teams.
Get off
your face.
they have a really hard mental edge. They find ways to win games. If you have a plan A that doesn't work, then they'll adjust that. They'll adapt it to fit a certain situation, to fit a certain environment. I think they have the players with the rugby brains to unpick Munster from that perspective. I am slightly concerned for them going back to the Aviva with what's happened there for English sides over the past couple of months.
Is it the same, though, for Munster going to the Aviva as it is for Leinster being at the Aviva?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's easier for them than perhaps Claremont going down to Lyon. You know, I think there's more familiarity around the stadium than there will be for Claremont. But I think Saracens, they've just got so much strength. You know, John mentioned it there. The first hour last week against Northampton, they were way off the pace.
Well, because they probably had their heads on this game, didn't they?
Well, and they've changed a lot of players, but they found a way to win. And that's against a side that were, fighting for every point that was available within the Premiership. I just think Saracen's going to have a bit too much.
Emma?
I've said Munster for a while throughout the pool stage that they were going to go on and win it this season, but you pit them against Saracens, and I listened to what Tom said, and I have to agree with it all. I think Saracens will find that way to win and will do so, not comfortably certainly, but they'll get the job done in difficult circumstances in an atmosphere that's quite intense still, Saracens.
And what are the fans saying on social media, Emma?
Well, we asked which club has impressed them the most, and Munster was the vast majority of the answers. Carmel O'Connor said Munster have defied expectations and the odds to get to the semi-final. Guts, passion, belief, skill, togetherness, and us, the fans, behind them every step of the way. Prepare for another miracle match next Saturday. I think she's certainly ready to shout from the stands. But Tony Grant, also on Facebook, he said, Saris at their best with a full squad. They are the top club in Europe by some distance.
So, Munster Saracens, the Aviva Stadium in Dublin, 3:15 kickoff local time on Saturday, the 22nd of April. You can watch it on BT Sport in the UK, beIN Sports in France, and Sky Italia in Italy. Still to come on the EPC European Rugby Show, we'll look ahead to Sunday's huge Champions Cup semi in France.
Remember, you can watch highlights from the Challenge Cup and Champions Cup knockout round matches presented by Heineken. Available 12 hours after the final whistle. Head to epcrugby.com for more information.
Well, before we look ahead to the other Champions Cup semi taking place this weekend, let's look ahead towards the finals, of course. The finals weekend of the Champions and Challenge Cup in Edinburgh, Friday the 12th, Saturday the 13th of May. They're thinking 100,000 supporters are going to be descending on the Scottish capital. It's going to be a fantastic feast of rugby. Great to have Visit Scotland's Director of Events, Paul Bush. Paul, you're going to be almost masterminding some of this, aren't you? A weekend in Edinburgh, it's got the pulses racing already, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's one of the great rugby weekends weekends, particularly for club rugby. I mean, the standard of the rugby goes up a huge notch. You know, it's test match rugby, both the Friday night and Saturday. And obviously ahead of the Lions this summer, it's a mouth-watering opportunity to look at the best in European rugby.
And certainly when you look at how much success Glasgow have been having recently, there is a resurgence there, Edinburgh too as well. Do you feel that that is helping kind of attract even more interest now?
I think it is, yes. I mean, obviously, Glasgow, you know, were unfortunate at Saracens a couple of weeks ago and Edinburgh lost to La Rochelle. But that doesn't take away from the fact that both clubs have had a great campaign this year. And the Scottish team have also had a very successful Six Nations. And the fact that we sold all of our Six Nations matches out for the first time ever in sort of, you know, Italy at home sold out was a fantastic achievement for the Scots. And there's a real resurgence in both the confidence and the spectator interest in rugby in Scotland. So we'll be looking forward to see which two teams we get in the final in May. And I'm sure whoever it is, we hopefully we'll have a full Murrayfield.
Tom May, you've had a few good weekends in Edinburgh, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
It's a don't great really want to know about them. But
it's a great place to go up and watch rugby and just wander around the city, actually. It's a fantastic place to be. What I would like to know, though, is how you cater for 100,000 people just arriving on your doorstep. Give us some sort of insight into what you have to put into place for an event like this.
Well, Tom, it's a pretty well-oiled machine. I mean, the last time we obviously had the Cup final, it was Leinster-Leicester. Two great teams with great supporting bases. And in fact, there was probably a lot of fans that didn't get tickets for the match that day. But it starts really at the sort of points of entry. And, you know, whether it be Glasgow or Edinburgh, we have two very sophisticated airports, great route networks from wherever people will be coming from. And then Edinburgh's used to hosting large number of people. I mean, we host the world's biggest cultural festival every August that sells 5.5 million tickets, which is actually more than the Football World Cup. So without being complacent or arrogant, we have a fantastic machinery to put in place, whether that be hotels, restaurants, bars, nightclubs, you know, other attractions like Edinburgh Castle, the zoo, you know, the Royal Yacht Britannia down at Leith. So this is probably one of the great cities in Europe for rugby fans to come. And then on the top of that, of course, a fantastic match on the Saturday afternoon to crown the European champions again.
Yeah, so what can fans expect over that weekend if there are people thinking about planning a weekend?
Well, there'll be a fan zone in the city, which is really exciting to see. So if there's anybody unlucky enough not to get a ticket, they'll be able to go to the fan zone. We'll be looking for, obviously, people to experience Edinburgh at its best. You know, it'll be a sunny weekend, as always, as Tom remembers in Edinburgh. I'm sure he didn't play in anything but sun in Edinburgh in the past. And, of course, now we have a great pitch at Murrayfield. It's a hybrid pitch, so the conditions are really good for the players. There'll be a great atmosphere at the ground. The gates will be open 2 to 3 hours before the match, so they'll be able to soak up the atmosphere and then really enjoy what I'm sure will be an enthralling cup final.
Paul, great to have you on. Thanks very much. And yeah, really looking forward to the finals. And if you want to be at that climax of the European club rugby season in Edinburgh, you can head to epcrugby.com to secure your tickets for the final on Saturday, the 13th of May. Now, ticket sales will be closed from 2300 hours BST, that's midnight CET, on Friday, the 21st of April, ahead of the semi-finals, to enable fans of both finalists to have an equal opportunity to book their places for the BT Murrayfield showpiece. Now, ticket sales are going to reopen to the public on Monday morning, the 24th of April. So please follow official social media channels of the Champions Cup and epcrugby.com for all the details.
I'm Gregor Townsend, and you're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
Well, on to Sunday's Champions Cup semi-final now, and it sees ASM Clermont Auvergne up against Leinster Rugby, a 4 o'clock local time kickoff at the Marmoux Stadium de Gerland in Lyon. And here is the big question.
Is this to be Clermont's year?
They've been saying that for a number of years. Tom May, what do you reckon?
I think, you know, if they get through this fixture against Leinster, then they'll be in with a good shout, because when the final gets played, it'll be hopefully fairly dry up in Edinburgh for them, you know, and they'd fancy a good hard track as we have up in Murrayfield. But, you know, you just wonder whether those demons come back time and time again, you know, and on the other side of the draw, they've got two sides that will fancy their chances to win the competition this year. So, hey, look, if they get through this, they'll be doing what every side does and just taking it one fixture at a time. But no doubt they will have those demons parked somewhere deep in the back of their minds.
But how do they manifest themselves? Because when you're up for the game, you can't afford for that to creep in. But I imagine it creeps in if you suddenly become 7 or 10 or 12 points down, doesn't it? And then it really does begin to affect you.
Yeah, and I think the difficulty comes is that in every game, no matter what it is, there are swings in momentum and sides have the run of the game for periods of time. And it's how you mentally deal with those periods of time.
How did you do it?
I didn't really think too much when I was playing, so I got away with it. There's not too much in between these 2 ears, mate. But, you know, I think you have to try and block out past experiences. Now, no matter how you try and do that, it's difficult, especially when you've had the hurt that Clermont have had over the past few years within this competition, and people keep mentioning it. So it doesn't go away. You know, it's there. The players know about it, and it's how you try and park that and prepare yourself mentally to move forward from that. That's the difficulty because, you know, as I say, there are periods where you don't have control of the game.
Because I always find it interesting when you see a side concede a try and you go under the posts and you have that little team talk. What are those key words which teams are saying to try and take the initiative back?
It's largely dependent on the circumstance. You know, you might have a situation where there's a try, you've conceded a try which has gone completely against the run of play, at which point, you know, you almost find that the lads are just sort of laughing and say, well, you know, well, that's completely against what's been happening in the game. Let's just crack on with what we're doing. The alarming bit gets is if you, 1, 2, 3 scores then come back past you, there's then a general look of concern amongst players and you all start looking towards the leaders within that team to try and, you know, find a real adaptation to the game and a progression out of the situation.
So Clermont, the only team in the semi-finals never to have won the Champions Cup. Here's their head coach, Frank Azema. Obviously, our objective is to win and to try and reward the players, the club, the coaches, the supporters and everyone who's involved. Our motivation is certainly to win titles. We know that we have the ability to stand up and fight in the knockout rounds. Winning the competition would be a great reward for all the hard work that has been done. Emma Thurston, Lyon. I just wonder how interesting that will be for them because we were talking earlier about the significance of the two venues in the semi-finals. Does it play into Clermont's hands, do you think?
Oh, yes, from the perspective that geographically it's in France, that's obvious. So therefore, slightly easier for Clermont fans to arrive. But I think what you get with all Irish provinces is a passionate support at home and away. So it's not going to be like the Stade Marcel Michelin. It's not that familiarity. So Leinster will be able to play on that slightly. And I think going back to what Tom said about these psychological demons, that's what Leinster have to pick up on that and they have to really use that early. And if they do that, question mark that Clermont have and those players that have been in playoffs before in the European Cup and haven't made it, those finals, then they start to get those questions. So I think Lyon's a fantastic stadium to play in. There'll be plenty of Clermont support, but it's not home-home.
I was in Dublin watching that quarter-final against Wasps. The first two tries Leinster scored had real width on them. They were missing out a couple of players in the middle, and they probably can't afford to be so wide so early on against Clermont, can they? That they're going to have to play the direct game right from the whistle.
Yeah, I think every side earns the right to go wide. And you go wide early on, it's very easy defensively, or it's easier defensively to cater for that. Leinster need to match Clermont up front. That's a difficult ask as it is. And then they need to get guys like Robbie Henshaw over the gain line and then they've got the backs to try and exploit that space. But you can't just go to the width straight away. And you almost play into Clermont's hands then. You're a bit like, well, you know, this is going to be an open game where we just play from everywhere. Clermont go, right, well, we're up for that. So, you know, let's see who wins.
Head coach Leo Cullen is keen to get Leinster back to winning ways. What a season it's been for them so far. He knows, though, just how tough this stage of the competition will be.
We've just such a great history in the competition. You know, I know it's, you know, a tournament where probably Leinster flattered to deceive for a number of years is what it felt like anyway. Eventually Leinster went on to obviously win the tournament in 2009 and back that up in 2011 and 12. So the last couple of years has probably been a little bit frustrating. The format is unique. It creates a very intense knockout rugby. You know, when it comes down to it, there's, you know, be fine margins that will determine who wins these big games.
Emma, we know what Johnny Sexton can do, but Camille Lopez as a 10, is he, do you think, one of the most underrated fly halves?
Definitely. I think he, as you say, he's not discussed as much as some of the other fly halves are at this stage in the competition, But yet he works well with Morgan Power in that half-back partnership and just orchestrates Clermont, puts them in the right places. You can't play fantastic rugby and score loads of points if you haven't got a partnership that are moving you about the park and getting you into those right areas. So it'll be up to him to have a really big game, because we know what Jonathan Sexton brings, and Camille Lopez has to show consistency, I think, throughout the whole 80, along with Parra, to make sure that when it comes to the latter stages, and depending on what the scoreline is, that they're the ones that are cool and calm, and making sure that Clermont deliver. And I'm sure that Tom will know exactly what you need to do when it comes to that point in time.
Well, Tom, as a former fly half yourself, how do you rate Camille Lopez as a 10?
I think he's brilliant. I think he's taken some time to fill into that role. Certainly at international level, he's now running the show for France, really. But he's got a complete array of skills. His ability to find space and see space and put the ball with precise execution into that space is brilliant. Having said that, you know, he's got some good players around him on this Clermont side. And I think when they get on the front foot, they're going to be difficult to stop. And Lopez, you know, he's a great player, don't get me wrong, but he's made to look a lot better with the likes of Nakatachi around him, Nick Abendanen. You know, these are great players. And you know, there's a matchup I think that's fantastic. Yes, you've got Lopez against Sexton, but Lamarat against Henshaw in the midfield is a huge battle. Lamarat, I think, was man of the match in the quarterfinal and was outstanding, whether that be at the breakdown as in another back row or whether that be carrying and offloading. I think he's got everything. And I think I've always looked at him and thought, you know, I wonder what everyone sees in him. But that really was a highlight for me. And that made it clear what Remy Lamarat's about. And the battle between him and Robbie Henshaw is key to who wins this game.
Well, let's speak to somebody who knows a fair bit about French rugby. One of the greatest tight heads of all time. Won the European Cup 3 times with Toulon, Carl Heyman. Carl, great to have you on the podcast today. And you look at this clash, Clermont-Leinster, it is mouthwatering. We've already discussed the permutations of it. You've embraced the French culture. How dangerous do you think Clermont will be?
Oh, they'll be very dangerous. First of all, thanks for having me. But it's they'll be a very dangerous side. You know, just their attacking form and the mix they bring between attack and, you know, the French style of play as well. Be tight and reasonably nasty at times. So they're a team that offers a lot attacking-wise. And we saw in that game Toulon, although it wasn't all that pretty, you know, they're capable of playing that style of game as well.
And you were part of the crew that upset them so much at the later stages of the European competition, Carl. You know, they've been up and down a bit this season within the top 14. They've lost at home to sides that you perhaps wouldn't think they would lose to. Will this stage of the competition against a side like Leinster focus the levels of performance?
I'd think so. You know, obviously, I would imagine there'd probably be a bit of pressure from their point of view, considering they've been to this final stage a lot. They're often in this situation of finals but haven't really turned percentage into winning results. So
does that weigh on your mind, Carl, when you're a player, that you know that you've got so close but you haven't, you know, always the bridesmaid, never the bride sort of thing?
Yeah, I guess the one scenario I can refer it to is probably the case of the All Blacks back in the, especially the 2007 World Cup. And as much as you'd say there's no pressure, it is added pressure. If you look at it, for us, it was 20 years without results. You know, so there is that added pressure which weighs on a team, and I'm sure that's going to be weighing on Clermont to a certain extent.
What do you feel in terms of, from a Leinster point of view, they really need to focus on to make sure that they prevail against this Clermont side?
When we look at Leinster, I think we know that their attacking ability. So I think the question for them is just going to be up front with their set piece. With a number of the French teams, as soon as they sense weakness there, you know, they go right after it. And providing Leinster can have quality ball at the set piece and be strong up front, we know what they can do attacking wise. So for me, that's a real crucial area of the game for them.
Breakdown's obviously going to be significant, but you look at the lineups this weekend, particularly you look at the tens, Lopez, who is growing a reputation, Tom, you'd fairly say. You're a big fan of Lopez. Johnny Sexton, we can discuss until the cows come home. But can Lopez, do you think he can dominate a game like Sexton can?
I think he showed it in glimpses during the season, you know, and especially the way he's played this year. I think he's gone from strength to strength. But yeah, two vitally key roles, obviously. And from my point of view, from an upfront perspective, having those two guys there who know how to run and control the game definitely makes that job up front that much easier, knowing that they will make the right decision when to kick, when to run, and they're both obviously very capable tens at doing both.
I mean, that first scrum will be epic, won't it? Looking at those front rows, who do you think on paper has the advantage?
It's hard to say, I think. I think it's going to be a
one heck of a battle. That battle there is going to be very another key battle in terms of two attacking sides that want to play well. And we know how hard it is to play when you don't have the quality of ball. I think Claremont will target that area there, especially in the scrum. But the Leinster have shown that, you know, they're not, it's not as if they're weak in that area either. So there should be a lot of fireworks early on, I'd imagine.
And now with your coach's hat on, Carl, you've faced them this year with Poe. What, you know, how do you try and analyse them when you're preparing for them during the week? What area? Because they've got firepower up front and out the back. Who do you particularly target?
That's a tough one because, as well, the offloading game is very hard to defend. You know, it's about 2 or 3 weeks ago we took 50-odd points up there at Claremont, bearing in mind that was on the back of their loss to Montpellier. So I think they all had a bit of an axe to grind against us. But, you know, it's a very well-balanced side from a Leinster perspective. I think, obviously, their attack is very well-structured, and it's going to be for them just to concentrate on the quality of ball and also just to sticking to what they've been doing with their attack. Because like any teams, if you're able to have some continuity of ball, put phases together, there will be weaknesses, and Leinster have the players to exploit those weaknesses when they come about.
Well, Carl, it's been great to have you on the podcast. Thanks very much. And I hope the rest of the season goes according to plan.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's the French perspective. Let's get the Irish one now, with a man who played for over 10 years with Leinster, former British and Irish Lion, of course, Shane Byrne. Shane, lovely to have you on the podcast.
Thank you.
We've had two front row forwards on the podcast for this one. So we often don't really get the... I think Tom Mays are back. I was a very average back in my junior days. So it's great to have the front row kind of understanding.
Yeah, and you finally get the truth.
Absolutely. It's taken us years. Richard Strauss, Benjamin Keita, I mean, you look at those two players, who do you think has the upper hand?
Oh, well, listen, it's more of a bigger question than that. I think it's really the size of the Claremont pack, I think, is something that Leinster are definitely going to be talking about. I think Leinster have been at their best when they've been playing a very wide, fast, clinical, efficient brand of rugby. And I think part of that game plan that's going to be put together by Stuart Lancaster and Leo Cullen is shifting that pack around, because that, I think, is a major, major strength of Claremont. They were very businesslike, I suppose, against Toulon in the quarterfinal. They just got through business and they're in great shape in the league. So they're the nearly boys of the European rugby we've known for so many years. But in the defeats that they have done, it's nullify their pack first. And that's where I think Leinster are going to be going for it.
Do you think Leinster will be slightly concerned? They got beaten up slightly against Montpellier in the rounds of the competition. Do you think that's going to be a real concern for them going into this game?
Well, I think they have a team. Like, we don't know what way they're going to go exactly, but I have a team that they can take on pretty much most sides. But the one thing about the French is that they love that physical one-out, and it does take its toll, as we all know. And that's something that they're just going to have to be aware of. And they're just going to have to be up for it, in the sense that this is going to happen. They have a great backline. They're going to try rummage it up the front and then spread it out. But that's the difference, I think, with Claremont, is that, OK, they're missing Fofana and guys like that, who is a big loss for them. But they still have such a dangerous team right the way across the 15, is that they can't afford to just take a pummeling up front and then let their defence go down. I suppose Leinster probably had a good, you know, as you're saying with that Montpellier game and things like that, that they've ticked the right boxes. They're aware now that they could end up in a situation very much like that. So they've had the rehearsal. Now they need to just prove it on the main stage.
And in terms of that physicality, as you mentioned, I assume then that the start will be vital. How important will it be for Leinster to really go out in that first quarter? Or does it matter if it comes to sort of 50, 60 minutes and they need to claw it out?
No, I think they still have the ability to claw it out in the final, but I think the start is absolutely essential. As we all know, travelling away from home is hard enough. But if you travel away in semi-final of the European Cup down in the depths of France with a massive baying crowd there, if you give them anything to cheer for, to go against, that is a big, big problem. You need to quieten that crowd right from the off, because, as we all know, Tom, you know it well, that if you silence that French crowd, it's a huge thing. It's a big 16th man that they have. And if you can silence them for as long as you possibly can going through the game, the pressure isn't on you. The pressure is on the French side to start getting that scoreboard ticking over. So the longer that Leinster start well and stay in the game, that's going to suit them perfectly fine.
Stuart Lancaster was saying, Shane, that they have to fight fire with fire. In simple terms, how would you describe or compare even the packs? I mean, you've talked about how they're going to have to be moved around, how they've got to be agile, how they've got to be mobile. But if you were to describe the DNA of the separate packs, how would you?
Well, I suppose that the Leinster pack is more about shifting and moving and moving the point of contact and being able to keep play going and facilitating an attacking game. Where the Claremont pack is about bludgeoning right through you and over you and just using their massive bulk to really hurt you up front and to get over that gain line doing the hard way. Now, there's plenty of big, big ball carriers in the Leinster team, even with the likes of Jamie Heaslip missing. There's plenty of guys who are willing to do it. But I think that would be more, the Leinster pack would be more punching smartly, you know, ducking and diving, doing a bit of Muhammad Ali rather than the Joe Foreman just absolutely bludgeoning up the whole way. And I think that's the difference. The two of them are fantastic packs, littered with internationals and very, very formidable in on their day, both sides. But I just think Leinster will be looking to play a smarter, cuter game. I think they'll compete absolutely doggedly at ruck time. But I think as far as the one out, I think you'll see a lot of chop tackles coming in from them and a lot of just trying to slow that ball up, dictate the pace of the ruck, because that is the way you do beat these guys. And when the opportunity comes, they spread them wide. They keep them running, get those big lungs, get those big legs moving, because that is, the Leinster pack have that in spades. There's no issue. No matter what way they go with their team, that's the way they can run it, no problem.
And should Claremont get on the front foot, let's assume they get over the gain line once or twice.
Yeah.
Leinster's defence has been pretty good this season. You know, and they were quite good against Wasps, I thought, albeit Wasps weren't performing to their full ability in the quarterfinals. Should Claremont repeatedly get on the front foot, do you think Leinster's defence has got enough to cater for what Claremont have out wide?
Well, yeah, they've been tested every now and again, but they've always come up trumps. There seems to be a great calmness in this. In, okay, look, we all know that the moment of contact has to be full aggression. You have to push the guy back. But they never panic, and their scramble defence is excellent. I fully expect Claremont, even with, as I do say, like Fofana is a big, big miss for them, because he's a real spark that lights their fire. But I think Leinster, yeah, they will be able to hold on to it. It's just that when Claremont get through, they're brilliant at absolutely pouring through that hole, and the cover defence would be well, you know, needed. But I think one guy who's absolutely essential to that is Robbie Henshaw. We forget, like, he's only a young guy. He's only very early 20s, only a kid, and he's playing like an absolute seasoned international. His physicality is immense. His skill set is huge, and he's absolutely central, along with this, you know, Gary Ringrose putting the centre partnership together.
Joey Carberry as well. I mean, he's just been astonishing from fullback, hasn't he, Shane?
Absolutely. Now, there's a kid that his fifth professional game was when he came on against the All Blacks, and he played with it with a calmness. He just has a pair of cojones on him. There's absolutely nothing fazes him. If you saw in that Wasps game, he caught it from fullback and ran almost every time. But there was one of the times he caught it, got caught, turnover, Wasp scored a try. Directly his fault. He shouldn't have run it. What did he do the next kick? Ran it again. These guys just know the way they want to play, and they've massive confidence. This is a kid that last year was playing in the local club, amateur club division, and had to move club because he couldn't get his game anywhere. Was playing fullback most of his career there, play out half whenever he really, you know, had to, and now has just absolutely exploded on the scene. But this young squad, Leinster via Leo Cullen, have developed an absolutely unbelievable squad of players. Like, you're talking 30-plus players that are completely interchangeable, because that's what they do. And they have these guys who are just so confident. When they get the opportunity, they're able to take it. Now, but we all know, come this weekend, it will be the best absolute side that they can put out on the park. Against, you know, a side Claremont, if it wasn't against Leinster, honestly, Claremont deserve to win the European Cup at some point. You know, they have been so close so many times, and probably look at a couple of times that they messed up themselves. And that rankles on them. Are they as good as they were when they got to the couple of finals? I don't know if they are. But Leinster, are they as good as they were when they were doing the three European Cup finals? I think they're on the way there, but they're not there yet.
Well, cheers, Shane. Thanks very much for coming on the podcast. Great to hear from you. He's always a terrific talker, Shane Byrne. And so many people are going to have an opinion here. Emma, what are all the fans saying on social media?
Well, one of my favourite names on social media, Basilicious on Facebook, says Leinster impressed him the most. And it's Leinster because we play the most exciting rugby in Europe. And Yossi as well, great name. Clermont finished first in the group stages and played well all season. I think we all agree with that. And if you want to give your reaction to everything that's going on at Champions Cup on Twitter and at ER Challenge Cup from a Challenge Cup perspective and on Facebook, European Rugby Champions Cup and European Rugby Challenge Cup, to tell us all your views.
So, Tom, when it comes to the predictions, can you be as simplistic and say, right, if Clermont can handle the mental element of this, they'll be through to the final?
Yeah, I think so. I think they'll go into this game with a fair amount of confidence. They lost at home to Brive in the domestic competition, which would have given them a real rocket at the right time. They then went and dispatched Grenoble, put 60 points on them. So they're in a fairly angry mood, I think, after a home defeat like that. And they'll be really focused on getting past this into the final. Because I reckon now that they'll think, right, look, Toulon are gone, the bogey team are gone. Let's try and move forward in this competition and really take an opportunity to win it.
So you're going Clermont? Emma?
I'm inclined to agree. Again, we're all in agreement here, aren't we? I think Clermont, they've been the bridesmaids so many times. They have to make it through for their own peace of mind. They have to give themselves a shot at the title, and they will fancy their chances at BT Murrayfield. So I think Leinster travelling away, it's going to be close. It's going to be tough, but Clermont for me.
So ASM, Clermont Auvergne against Leinster Rugby at the Mamou Stadium de Gerland. At 4 o'clock kickoff local time, Sunday the 23rd of April, and you can see it on FR2 and BN Sports in France, Sky Sports in the UK and Sky Italia in Italy. That's the Champions Cup semi-finals taken care of, but still to come, we'll cast our eyes over the remaining four clubs left in the European Rugby Challenge Cup.
You're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
Well, before we look at the Challenge Cup semi-finals, let's turn our attention to the EPCR European Player of the Year, presented by Turkish Airlines. Now, the 15 nominees have been announced. Voting has now opened, but you only have until Friday, the 21st of April, to cast your vote. Now, the initial list of 15 nominees will then be whittled down to five remaining candidates, and the winner announced as a combination of the fans' vote and the choice of our distinguished panel of rugby experts. Now, if you're struggling to decide who to go for, then here's a handy guide to the nominees, courtesy of one of that distinguished panel, Andy Nicol. Well, Emma caught up with a European Cup winner and began by discussing Munster fly half Tyler Blaendel.
Tyler Blaendel, he's just pulled the strings for Munster. He's got them playing the right places. He's the playmaker. He's made them tick. He's also the goal kicker.
Elliot Daly, Wasps.
Elliot Daly has just been on fire. He's such an attacking player. It's where he plays as he's centre in the wing, but wherever he plays, he's outstanding.
Owen Farrell, Saracens.
Owen Farrell is just the ultimate warrior. I just think he's got such a game face about him. He understands how to win. He's just a complete winner, and he makes Saracens tick.
Tag Furlong, Leinster Rugby.
Tag Furlong has just been the rock that Leinster have built their performances on. He's outstanding in the loose as well. He's one of the best tight heads out there.
Johnny Gray, Glasgow Warriors.
Johnny Gray puts in a level of commitment I don't think I've ever seen from anyone. He regularly tops the tackle count and the carry count. His work rate is phenomenal and his accuracy is phenomenal. He is a phenomenal player.
Stuart Hogg, Glasgow Warriors.
Stuart Hogg has been on fire all season. He is just electric at the moment. He's loving his rugby. He's playing brilliant rugby. He lights up every game he plays in.
Mauro Itoje, Saracens.
Well, the reigning player of the year, and he's back up to that level again. He's come back from injury. He's probably not hit the levels which were so high last year, but that proves how good he is.
Joe Launchbury, Wasps.
Joe Launchbury is just consistency personified. He doesn't look like he does a lot, but he does a huge amount. Hugely effective in the tight, but outstanding in the loose as well.
Camille Lopez, Clermont Auvergne.
He's the playmaker for Clermont. He makes them tick. He's a goal kicker. He gets the back line going. He's that little general between the forwards and the backs, and he's a great player to watch.
Conor Murray, Munster Rugby.
Conor Murray, I think, has developed into one of the best scrum halves in world rugby. He controls the game so well. He's a fighter, he's a battler, but he's got the cool head as well, and he is integral to Munster.
Ethan Asewa, Leinster Rugby.
Very experienced player at Nasewa, and just a Leinster legend. He's got so much experience. He knows where the trialling is, but more importantly, he knows how to win the European Cup. And it's that level of experience that I think have helped Leinster this season.
Noah Nakatathi, Clermont Auvergne.
He finishes off all the stuff that's created in Clermont.
and he's got so much pace. He's so exciting. He's just one of the great players to watch when he gets the ball in hand.
Gary Ringrose, Leinster Rugby.
I think this is hard for Gary Ringrose because everyone is comparing him to the great Brian O'Driscoll, but that's because he's that good. He's maybe not at that level yet, but who was? But he's got that ability, he's got that fight about him as well, which you need an outside centre. He's a class act who will only get better.
CJ Stander, Munster Rugby.
What a ball carrier Stander is. He gets Munster going forward, he gives him the go forward all the time, he gives him the platform to play, and he just is in the heart of everything they do. He's become a hugely important figure down at Munster.
Thomas Young, Wasps.
Thomas Young has been outstanding for Wasps this year. In a team full of stars, you know, he's one of the few players not playing international rugby, but his consistency, his pace, his reading of the game has been outstanding, and he's well worth of being on this list.
So, guys, who enhanced their chances then, do you think, off the back of the quarterfinals, Tom?
Well, I think for me, the standout player for Saracens was Owen Farrell. I think his performance with ball in hand and with boot was sensational against Glasgow. So he's certainly enhanced his chances.
Emma, what about you?
I certainly would agree with that. And I think also Ethan Nsewa for Leinster, I think Ethan is a player for them that not only does he bring a lot around the park and he took that try against Wasps, it's his leadership as well. I think Issa brings a lot to the party.
And they haven't got long now, the fans, if they want to register and choose who they think is the player of the tournament.
Now, absolutely. Voting closes on Friday, the 21st of April. Voting is online at Facebook, at our European Rugby Champions Cup Facebook page, and also live at epcrugby.com. So make sure that you cast your vote and don't miss out, because there's only a short time left.
This is the EPCR European Rugby Show with Tom May, Emma Thurston and me, James Burridge. And the weekend ahead not only sees the semi-finals of the Champions Cup, but also the European Rugby Challenge Cup as well. Dave Beckett looks ahead.
Two-time champions Gloucester will travel to Stade Marcel de Flandre with hopes of spoiling the party for La Rochelle, who are well on their way to rewriting their club's history. Described as the Leicester City of the top 14, La Rochelle head into Saturday's semi-final on an impressive run of form and top of the French League, having already qualified for the Champions Cup for the first time. Home advantage favours the French outfit, but the Cherry and Whites know how to make it to a Challenge Cup final.
And it is all about Gloucester. The wait is over. A second European Challenge Cup to add to the one from 2006.
The last time La Rochelle were beaten in a Challenge Cup game was back in December, losing by 21 points to, you guessed it, Gloucester.
Denton does the first part, Kvesic, Braley, and they're straight through it, match scored! There's a bonus point, all right! How crucial will that score be?
Can they back it up in La Rochelle? Well, we will see.
La Rochelle hit back, leaving both sides with a win at home and a loss on the road. We stay in France to find out who our second finalist will be when Stade Francais Paris host Bath on Sunday. Both teams could be haunted by the ghosts of finals lost, with Stade Francais missing out on the Challenge Cup silverware to Leinster in 2013.
Another all sorts of trouble here on Stade Francais. Kian Healy tries to clear out. Kian Healy tries to rumble and drive! Kian Healy so close! The referee needs no TMO for assistance, and Kian Healy scores the decisive try, and it's Leinster who will win a fourth European title.
And Bath denied by Northampton Saints a year later.
A brave first half performance by Bath, but they couldn't resist the power of Saints in that second half. They dominated them, they got their composure, and fully deserving of their win.
There'll be plenty of scores to settle this weekend, but who will be heading to Murrayfield on the 12th of May? Remember, you can keep up with all the drama from the Challenge Cup semi-finals as it unfolds at epcrugby.com.
So, La Rochelle, Gloucester, Stade Francais, Bath, Tom May. How about an all-French final? What do you reckon? Home advantage, it looks as if it could be defining here.
Yeah, and I think even if you take home advantage away from the La Rochelle-Gloucester fixture, I think La Rochelle are flying this year. They're top by 10 points in the French domestic league, and they've got some great players. So I just think they're going to be a bit too tough for Gloucester to beat over there in France. Stade Francais almost, you know, back from the dead. You know, they were right down the bottom of the top 14, find themselves in sixth now. it's pretty hard to look away from a French final in this competition.
And for the two English teams here, and you look at Gloucester and Bath, their seasons have been up and down, haven't they? And this could be huge for them because it's about ultimately, I mean, Bath looking pretty good for Champions Cup rugby next season, but for Gloucester, it is far from conclusive.
Exactly. I think it's a really important statement for both of them. Silverware this season then makes undulating seasons look a whole lot better from a Gloucester point of view. They've been looking for that consistency all season. You know, they've had some fantastic results, but they haven't closed out matches in final quarters and they've lost them. And from Bath's point of view, they started really strongly. And I thought that their game against Leicester at Twickenham, the game that they took there a couple of weeks ago, I thought that was it. They were going to be back to real form and then they go and lose against Worcester. So both of them need to, I think, prove to themselves that they can turn up on the big stage this season, the knockout game, and do it the hard way, do it in France against two French sides that, as Tom said, have found a bit of form.
So let's go back to the Champions Cup semis, Tom. It's about nerve, isn't it? It's about character. And I suppose it's about trusting your teammates, effectively, when you keep it to simple things like that.
Yeah, and you wouldn't get to this stage of the competition if you didn't have the trust in your teammates around you and they didn't have the trust in you. With all of these sides, that's a given. The really interesting points about these sides is four sides that are at the top of their game. You know, we're lucky enough to have, you know, the best sides in the competition at this semi-final stage and some mouth-watering matchups. You know, they're great sides, great players, all battling out for the right to win this competition.
So who do you think is going to blink first then?
In terms, well, they'll all be blinking.
Here we go. It's taken 40 minutes to start to be clever.
I had to try and get it in. I think the final will be Clermont against Saracens.
Emma?
Like Tom, I think it will be a Saracens-Clermont final. I would love to see a Munster-Leinster final. I think the passion that would have, the intense rivalry between the two, and having that at BT Murrayfield would be fantastic. But given the semi-final matchups, I can't look past Saracens against Clermont. I think Clermont will overcome the psychological demons that they need to get through to the final, but then it ramps up a whole other level and Saracens know what to do at this stage.
Emma, Tom, as ever, great to have you in the studio. Looking ahead to this weekend, that's all we have time for on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Don't forget, it is Munster Rugby against Saracens on Saturday, the 22nd of April, and then ASM Clermont-Auvergne against Leinster Rugby on Sunday, the 23rd, in the last four of the European Rugby Champions Cup. And the two Challenge Cup semi-finals take place across that same weekend as well. And you can watch all the action via Sky Sports, BT Sport, beIN Sports, FR Dirt, FR Cat and Sky Italia. Plus, remember to go to epcrugby.com for all the stats and facts for the matches and teams in both competitions. Remember to send us your thoughts and predictions to @ChampionsCup and @ERChallengeCup on Twitter using the #ChampionsCup. And also on our Facebook pages, search for European Rugby Challenge Cup and European Rugby Champions Cup. But for now, from Tom May, Emma Thurston and myself, James Burridge, it's goodbye.